El colectivo Raíces presenta su programa
Espejos de Aztlán.
Información,
arte,
cultura.
Bienvenidos.
This is Adam Aguirre of the Raíces Collective for Espejos de Aztlán. Our guest tonight is Santino J. Rivera, the editor of an anthology just out on Broken Sword Publications, joining us to talk about a very interesting, insightful collection of stories, poems, drawings, imagination, and soul. It's called Lowriding, Shots, Rides, and Stories from the Chicano Soul, edited by Santino J. Rivera out of St. Augustine, Florida. Thanks for joining us tonight, Santino.
Oh, thanks for having me. Pleasure.
One of the first things you mentioned when we started talking was Richardson's Doghouse on Route 66 in downtown Albuquerque.
I'm originally from Denver. I was born and raised, spent my first 25 years there. I've got a ton of family in Albuquerque. A doghouse, me and my brother talk about it all the time. They have the best chili dogs I've ever had in my entire life. Blake's was another one that every time we go down there, we'd always go to those two places to eat. And they even have a doghouse t-shirt.
There are some insider things that people either get or they don't. One thing I might ask someone and immediately know or think I know everything I need to know about them. Cotton picker? Did you grow up working in the field in El Labor? But the lowrider and the lowrider, are we talking about a more urban Chicano? What question would one ask by way of introduction to determine the authenticity of the lowrider or the lowrider?
You were definitely talking the more urban style Chicano. I grew up in the city. I never worked a day of my life in the fields. I had family that did, of course. But as for myself, I was a city kid and then later on a suburbanite. I had a big chip on my shoulder growing up in Denver until I moved away from there and realized how not of a big city I think it was. When I was a kid, drove a 73 lowrider Impala. Those days were pretty wild and pretty fun. Back on those days fondly, both the good times and the bad times, especially dealing with the cops and whatnot. It was a lot of fun, and I have a lot of those stories in my head. The thing that I've noticed in literature as a Chicano publisher is that we're so segregated when it comes to literature. If you walk into any mainstream bookstore like Barnes Noble and you try and find books on Chicano literature, if you're lucky, they'll have a Hispanic section. And they'll maybe have five or six of the same books there, no matter where you go, coast to coast. And I grew kind of tired of that. I think we should have a place on the main shelves where all the main literature is instead of being segregated. So that's why I started publishing these books. As far as low writing, it's funny to me and also really weird that low writing culture is as popular as it is. It goes coast to coast and it goes around the world. It's super popular in Tokyo. They love Chicano culture. They love lowriders. They try and look like us, emulate us, the cars, the style, the music, the talk, tattoos, you name it. You see it on movies, on TV. You see it in magazines, of course. People bite off the style. But one thing you never learn or you never hear about is the stories behind the culture. You never hear about the people behind it who built these cars, who drove them, who loved these cars, who rode in them. I mean, you never hear about the background to lowriding. And it kind of blew my mind that there wasn't a single book in existence like that. I did a lot of research on this book, and there's books about the cars for car enthusiasts and people that like to take pictures of them. And there's a history book. There's a guy I'm actually sharing a panel with next month at the Tucson Festival of Books. He's a white cat out of, I want to say, Kansas. And he did like more of an anthropological study on lowriding. There's no stories, like there's no books where the stories from that would be presented. So I said, you know, let's see if we can do that. And one of my friends from L.A. is a photographer, Art Meza. He does these really beautiful, amazing photographs of lowriders and bombs and classic cars. I said, man, let's publish a book of your photos, and I'll do an open call submission coast to coast for anybody that wants to submit stories about lowriders or lowrider culture. You know, it kind of started from there. I was doing a book tour in L.A., and we announced it early last year, and submissions flooded in for the book. It was a really popular idea that resonated with people, but I think the book itself is as much as a work of art as one of those cars is.
I had my 10-year-old son with me the other day, and we were talking about this interview, and I had a hard time explaining to him what exactly low riding is, as in the driving of the car or the living of the lifestyle, and in low riding as in the literary, that type of literature. We should clarify for the listener as much as for ourselves. How would you describe each?
Low riding will differ depending on what part of the country you're in. Like I said, I grew up in Denver. I know Española is the lowrider capital of the world. I used to see them in Berkeley. I've seen them in L.A., definitely out in Tucson. There's some in Texas. Just like Chicano culture and just like our food, you get little twists on it here and there depending on wherever you are. The cars themselves don't change. There's twists on them from decade to decade depending on the style and the make and whatnot, but it's a thing of pride. So much work and pride goes into these cars. When I was a kid, we used to cruise up and down Federal Boulevard in Denver and 38th Street. And this was way before gentrification started hitting out there. It was this raza all over the place, up and down the street all night long, cruising those cars. It was the place to see and be seen. Now, some people live, breathe, eat, and dream that lifestyle from the dress, the music. There's a chapter in the book about all the music that accompanies the low-riding lifestyle. You know, the oldies people are really into and have actually seen a resurgence lately, especially online. But you take all of that, you kind of put a spin on it. I tried to coin a phrase called low writing. It just kind of came off the top of my head. Trying to think of a way, like, let's write stories about this stuff. Let's tell our tales. Let's bring to the public what it's like to live that lifestyle, be a fan of that lifestyle, know somebody in that lifestyle. And low writing doesn't mean that, you know, you have to have built a car or even to have driven one. I mean, there's a lot of love poems in the book from that side of the culture. If you look at films like Boulevard Nights, Danny De La Paz, who plays Chuco in that film, I have an interview with him in the book, and he's a lowriding icon. And that guy travels now on the lowrider circuit. If you look at people like Luis J. Rodriguez, who's in the book, he is a internationally known Chicano author. He gives his viewpoint on the impact Chicano culture and lowriding has had worldwide in places as far away as Tokyo. Lowriding can really be anything and everything having to do with the lowrider culture, but it was Chicanos that invented it and have made it thrive and last this long, so it's got a definite Chicano slant to it. That's something that isn't seen in mainstream literature at all. I wanted to give a voice to this genre that A, didn't exist, and B, really doesn't have any holding in any kind of mainstream literary circles. If you would try and pitch this book to a big publishing house or an agent or somebody who's used to the mainstream of literature, they're going to look at you funny because talking about a culture and also a subculture that usually kind of either gets really stereotyped or is frowned upon or is just really unknown.
If I ask you exactly what is a lowrider, lowriding, and lowriting, it will immediately conjure up some stereotypical images like Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke or War's classic song, etc. But then again, how far off are those iconic images? And I say iconic because the lowrider has clearly passed into pop culture history, surpassing even La Llorona and some say La Cucaracha as an image that some people readily identify Chicanos by. What do you say?
I think that those kind of things are just the tip of the iceberg, and that's been pushed again and again and again by Hollywood and the mainstream. And like I was saying, people never really go beyond that. Lowrider War, you know, or like you said, Up in Smoke, which, you know, again, that stuff gets pointed to, you know, time and again, and it's so much more beyond that. Coast to coast, there's tons of people that love these cars up in Chicago, which has a big Chicano community now. Texas, and it's funny because you'll see the different styles in the cars, you know, or something that is considered cool on a car in Texas might not fly in Whittier, California. There's different styles and different takes on it, and I'm sure Española puffs his chest as the lowrider capital of the world. There's always going to be a different take on it. So when I hear stuff like War or Cheech and Chong or somebody hopping their car or even Lowrider Magazine, Lowrider Magazine has a specific style that they present to people. The real loud, colorful, exploded pictures of the cars, you get a half-naked girl posing on there. Not a direction that I took with this book. Art Meza's photos don't go down that road. They're more of a image that you would see in a collector's calendar or catalog. They're classier. They're a throwback to maybe the Pachuco era where, you know, you had the bombs that were like really stylish and really classy. The book and the lowriding doesn't have so much of the gaudy aspect of lowriding that has been pushed in the mainstream so far, which isn't to say that that doesn't have a place in it. there's just so much more than that to the culture and to the style, which is what I wanted to bring to this book.
It's safe to say that, as in Cheech and Chong's Up in Smoke or War's classic Lowrider, even Lowrider magazine, the Lowrider, by definition, embraces that sort of stereotypical image. Wears it as a
badge of honor?
Yeah, an emblem of pride. I mean, the Lowrider isn't embarrassed to be a Lowrider.
No, of course not. It's changed throughout the decades, depending on, you know, when the next generation picks it up. You're seeing a lot of resurgence now from the stuff that was going on in the 70s. I mentioned Boulevard Nights, like a lot of those cars, the 70s styles cars, the Monies, the Dingle Balls, and the glitter and the flake and the murals on the cars, the hairstyles. A lot of that stuff is coming back in art circles now, especially out in L.A. and online, too. I mean, the number of kids online that worship these older movies and these older movie icons, all that stuff is seeing like it's second life now online. And most of it is taken out of context, which kind of irritates me, but at least it's reliving a second life. The Lowrider culture embraces all of that stuff because there is no single definition of what a lowrider is. It just goes way beyond it, and that's where the mainstream doesn't really get to see how much deeper the culture really is.
Back in style, or have people just figured out how to mine that market? And are you afraid that that doesn't leave room for maybe some current literary trends or people out there when style, like low riding, comes back into style?
That's a tough question. I mean, there's certain places where it never went out of style. I mean, it's just a way of life. And there's other places where it kind of died out. Where I grew up in Denver in the early 90s, it was real popular. I mean, there were tons of car clubs there. We used to cruise all hours of the night. The car shows used to come through town all the time. We also would get continually harassed by the cops, but not like it was. A lot of the gentrification that came into Denver has pushed that stuff out to the wayside to where it doesn't even really exist, at least not in the capacity that it did back in the day. But in L.A., in San Diego, lowriding is huge in San Diego and up in the Bay. Those places, the culture and the style thrives. What doesn't thrive is anything beyond that as far as literature or characters in film. Boulevard Nights came out in the 70s, and I don't think I've seen another film of that magnitude come out on those cars. Boulevard Nights is obviously more than about the cars, but the cars are a big part of the film. We don't get the opportunity to go beyond the street. It's kind of our own little circles, our own little parades. And it's us that keeps the culture going. I mean, it survived this long. It's seen a renaissance in certain areas. It's died out in others. And it's never stopped. You look back at history with a certain lens, but like with this book and like the photography that Art Mesa does in the book, you're capturing a moment in time. There's me and a few of my other colleagues that were pushed back against this new Latino marketing attack that's going on coast to coast. A lot of these marketers and a lot of these companies have finally woke up and realized that we've got a lot of money and a lot of buying power. So they're starting to create a lot of these products specifically at our demographics, which is silly in some aspects. Things like Latino Tide, for example, that's a silly product. Why do we need our own specialized soap? A lot of these guys are starting to wake up and smell the money. Just like the politicians do the same thing and try and manipulate people. You hear it all the time about the Latino vote, Latino voting bloc. There's a ton of that stuff, and there's a ton of these marketing and advertising guys that simply go after the dollar, and they don't think about the product. And Chicanos especially get either completely ignored or left behind, and this marketing storm is where a one-size-fits-all, which is not the case. Half the time, they don't even know what they're looking for or really what to market. So I think lowriding culture it flies under the radar. I mean, I'm not worried about them bringing that back to the forefront if it ever was there or diluting it. Or it's almost like that part of the culture, at least the deep part, the meaningful part, is invisible. You'll see a car in a movie, maybe on an ad once in a blue moon, but it's that part of our culture is relatively invisible. A certain part of that's good because it preserves it. This book, at least it brings it to the table. I'm an underground independent publisher, so I'm not reaching, quote-unquote, the mainstream like a lot of big house publishers could. I'm trying to preserve the culture as it always has been, and it's changed and pretty much been the same through and through. I'm not really worried about anybody taking it and diluting it. I don't think they'd be interested in doing that in the first place because it's not something that they could pair up toothpaste or shampoo or something with. And B, I think it's something that continually gets overlooked as far as that kind of stuff is concerned.
You're listening to Espejos de Aslan, a presentation of the Raices Collective. I'm your host, Adam Aguirre, and I'm joined tonight by Santino J. Rivera, editor at Broken Sword Publications. We're talking about a newly released anthology entitled Low Writing, Shots, Rides, and Stories from the Chicano Soul. Clearly, there's a difference between the old school lowrider and, say, the Sears lowrider. My son and I were YouTubing lowrider videos the other day so I could show him the difference. He laughed and laughed, but refused to believe that some of the acrobatics, some of the things that those cars do are for real. He thought they were great, but his first question, why? ¿Qué quiere decir el lowrider? What does a lowrider mean? What is his message, and to whom is he trying to communicate it with the vehicle of choice? Do they come in peace? Is this a cautionary tale? What is the lowrider's message?
I mean, look at like Boulevard 9. You have the two brothers in there. The older brother, Raymond, he is a straight shooter. He was trying to get away from the gang. He's going to get married to his girlfriend. He's got a job fixing and repairing the cars. And he's got his lowrider, which is his pride and joy that he works on continually and keeping up. It's a source of pride for him in his culture to put all of his energy into that vehicle. And then you look at his younger brother, played by Danny De La Paz, Chuco. He doesn't have that car. He doesn't have the girl. His brother gets him a job, but he screws it up. The cars in that film, I think, are very representative of doing something positive and doing something constructive and putting your pride and your work and your culture into a physical object. And in that film, it's contrasted with Chuco, where he goes out and he's looking for something to belong to, like his brother belongs to the car club. They, you know, you're talking about the acrobatics. They have the hops, and you'll see cars do all the kind of crazy stuff with the hydraulics. That's all just for their own fun and their own enjoyment. Their girlfriends are enjoying it. It's a sense of pride, you know. It's kind of like having your own tribe. And then you have the younger brother who doesn't have anything like that. He doesn't have any connection to anything. He looks to the gang for that kind of acceptance and that kind of love and that kind of belonging and to express his pride and his culture. And it ends up blowing up in his face. That's just one example, I think, of what those cars can represent, you know. And obviously you're going to get different answers on them. And, you know, I'm by no means an authority on lowrider cars myself. I mean, I drove one, but I didn't have the pride of building one like a lot of guys do. What's the saying? They say, built, not bought. I inherited mine from my uncle. And you're going to find different reasons for why guys do these things. And girls, because there's a lot of women that are into these cars as well. So there's actually a female car club, all-female car club in San Diego, in the book also. So, I mean, it really, myriad of reasons of why people do it. But I think the biggest one is just expressing your pride into a physical, tangible object.
My observation about Boulevard Nights is the dilemma. One has the car, and to him and to the brother in a different way, it represents a type of upward mobility. We as the audience see a mobility that necessarily is upward. It's a most literal type of mobility in that he has his car and can go somewhere. I think as the audience, we're left there thinking, isn't the dilemma that symbolic of their lack of upward mobility, that their status symbol is a vehicle?
That's the sign of the time back in the 70s. I think Raymond, if his wife or his girlfriend at the time is offering him a job with her and he screws up the interview, like he's on his way up to the white picket fence and the perfect job, the dog and everything else. The drama with his brother happens and he has to choose between family and his possible future, and he chooses his family. So I think in the film, he's beyond the car, but he chooses family over that. Chuco in that movie doesn't have, even though Raymond offers him the job actually has to do with fixing up the cars, he doesn't have the same vision that his brother does. And about back then, a job like that would be, you know, maybe different than what we're talking about today with the way the economy is.
They say that when you arrive, how you arrive says as much about you as anything else. Your ride says it all, in some people's mind. When a lowrider shows up to that big job interview for that special date, what is it that he expects? As the audience, we maybe would laugh, giggle, or nod knowingly. Oh, come on, you can't expect her to take you seriously. You can't expect that interviewer to take you seriously when you show up in a ride like that, no matter how much money, how much heart and soul you've poured into it.
That's a good question.
Like the old prison tattoo, it says it all. Or does it?
Right. Tattoos are like so mainstream now that everybody and their grandma has one. That's one way to look at it. And then you can also look at like the music industry and how a lot of those guys portray themselves as having really flashy cars.
Need I mention the Harley Davidson? Everybody's got one now. It's a symbol of something to some people.
But you make a good point. It's going to depend on your environment, where you're at. I live in suburbia, St. Augustine, Florida. There's no lowriders over here. Not even close, you know, and I drive a Honda Pilot. If I showed up with a tricked out 64 slammed on Dayton's in my driveway, I'd get funny looks for sure. Probably a majority of places in the country, if your boss was watching you and you drove to a job interview and you showed up with your top two buttons buttoned and tattoo showing and your sunglasses on, you know, like we used to dress back in the day.
Yeah,
you're funny and they would judge you. But, I mean, there's other parts of the country where that's, you know, nobody's going to bat an eye. There's a lot of places in L.A. where, you know, you see lowriders all the time. They're parked up and down, driven regularly, kind of stuff just flies. Are those guys in super crazy straight-laced jobs where their boss isn't going to wink an eye? It's just part of the norm. Nobody's going to look twice if you see a car like that. That's part of the fun, you know what I mean? If nobody's looking at you, then there's half of your fun gone anyway.
For the record, I've never been a lowrider. I've always been a 4x4 guy. I was telling you earlier, my wife is of Scandinavian descent. Right after we'd first met, I went to her house to pick her up. I don't think she had any idea what vehicle I drove. I showed up in my 4x4, parked not right in front of her house. Went to the door, got her. We came back out. There was a lowrider, the mythical lowrider truck, parked closer to her house than I had parked. We came down the walk. I walk to it, get my keys out, and act as if I'm going to open the door for her in a lowrider truck. My wife's 6 feet tall. It was a setup for a gag, not a test or some sort of trial. The look in her face said it all. It was a look of surprise, of intrigue. It wasn't
shock.
It wasn't what you would expect. You know, maybe that look of disgust, of rejection, you know, the lip curling of snootiness. That one look accepted that lowrider, thinking that that must be some sort of extension or expression of me. The way she accepted that, was about to hop in, said it all. That set everything in motion. You know, we've been married 16 years now. Do you ever, I guess there is the other side of that. People accept that as an expression of you or as an extension of your character or of your soul.
Muscle cars, classic cars, those are seen as a part of all-American, Americana. There's muscle car shows coast to coast. That is an accepted part of car culture that nobody ever questions. It never has any negative connotation. Muscle car culture never gets questioned. It never gets pegged as being negative. Lowrider culture almost always has a negative connotation to it. And that's one thing that I push back against with this book and these photographs, is because that's also silly. And that's a stereotype from Hollywood that they've pushed over the decades so that people look at the cars and the culture, and largely at us, look down their nose and say, well, that spells trouble, that the Mexicans have moved in, or what, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And it's undeserving, because most of the cats that I know and that I've met and seen over the years aren't troublemakers, aren't out there causing trouble. These guys just love the cars. It's just another piece of American car culture, like anything else, like the biker culture, which has seen a super resurgence in popularity thanks to TV lately. Muscle car culture, classic car culture, you know, these are all American pastimes, and lowrider culture is the same thing, an American pastime. And just like I push with my books, Chicano authors are also American authors. I pushed back in Tucson when they banned Chicano studies there, and they banned a bunch of Chicano and Chicana authors. I published a book in response to that, and I've tried to raise awareness coast to coast with the mainstream and say, you're banning America. You're banning American literature. This is American literature. These are American authors, you know, and I would say the same thing about lowriders to anyone that would look down their nose at them. And there's no different from muscle car culture. It's, you know, it's another part of American culture, one that often gets pegged wrong and overlooked.
There are Jeep people, off-roaders, bikers, soccer moms, midlife crisis guys. Even Christy Brinkley in a Ferrari, National Lampoon's Vacation, is a type. All immediately identifiable by their rides. But the lowrider, what is the lowrider vehicle of choice? And what makes the lowrider choose the truck?
You're going to get me in trouble asking that, because there's different guys that'll tell you 20 different things. For me, it's always been the Impala. I drove the 73 when I was a kid, and I loved it. I've always wanted to get a 65 hardtop. The 64 and the 63s out in L.A., and those are classic. Those are beautiful cars. For me, it would be some incarnation, some year of a Chevy Impala. The truck is a whole other ball of wax, and you have a whole another subculture of lowrider enthusiasts who go to town on the trucks. There's a poem, actually, by Angelo Sandoval, who hails from Cordova out there. He wrote a poem about his lowrider truck growing up in the book. Actually, there's a couple poems in there about trucks, now that I think about it. Anna C. Martinez is also from Brick. He's a civil rights attorney lawyer out there. She wrote about a truck. Again, you're going to hear different things from different authorities in different parts of the country saying, no, it's an Impala, or no, it's a 50 Sport, or a 30 Sport. Or
would you say it's American and not Japanese?
I would say, yeah, but, I mean, when I was a kid in the 90s, that's when you started to have all the hybrids and all the Japanese cars. Those were cheaper and easier to get, and you had a lot of kids who would start tricking out the Honda Accords. I mean, I grew up seeing the Honda Accords on Gold Daytons with the neon and the tinted windows, I mean, which is a whole nother subset of the culture.
Only in America.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you got the purists who are only going to say it's the Bombs and it's the Impalas. I mean, there's lowrider bicycles that people get into. I mean, it stretches the whole gamut.
Let's talk about the book. It's dedicated to my family for strengthening me, lowriders for doing the same for the word, and our culture and the lowriding community for displaying their pride for all of us to see low and slow. How'd you go about finding particular works in this anthology?
I held open submissions. I did that with the last anthology that I was talking about for Tucson. I'm a guerrilla marketer. I'm a guerrilla publisher. I don't have the funds to hire publicists like a lot of the big house publishers do. So you put word of mouth out online. I rely on, you know, friends and people that follow me on Twitter or Facebook and whatnot to help spread the word. And it just kind of multiplies on its own, and it reaches out and it goes coast to coast. I'll put it on the website. With this book, put the word out, and people just jumped all over it. It was really kind of crazy how many submissions I got. And I was floored by some of the amount of talent that came into the book. Like I was saying, Luis de Rodriguez is in there. Luis Alberto Gurrea is in there. Danny de la Paz, who people would know from Boulevard Nights and American Me. Daniel Villarreal, who is a little puppet in American Me, and he's also the little cholo in Stand and Deliver, that is the finger man, flips off the teacher. He's in there. There's a whole wide range of people, diverse writers from all over the place that are in there that just found me online and submitted their stuff. I killed myself over the months as editors do, sifting through everything and picking out the best stuff and the stuff that I thought would best represent it. It turned out to be a beautiful book. From New Mexico in particular, there's Richard Vargas. He's from Albuquerque. Angelo Sandoval from Cordova. Manuel Gonzalez from Albuquerque. Tara Yvonne Trudell from Las Vegas, New Mexico. Anna C. Martinez from Berkeley. And Andrea J. Serrano. She's also from Berkeley.
There's a lot of diversity. I mean, there are some really, really good works in here. We hadn't even talked about Art Mesa's work.
He's amazing. Our culture gets pegged as, like, you know, being one thing. It's so much deeper than that. It's so much deeper. And I like to publish and show people the diversity that we have. And I think this book, while the central theme is lowriding culture, it will show you just exactly how diverse we are, because there's a bunch of cool stuff in there. And I think the book really surprises people. Art was telling me that people they're shocked almost, because they think that it was just going to be a book of his photos. It carries over 50 of his photos in color. But when they find out about the stories in there, people are just blown away. They didn't expect both. You either do a photo book or you do a story anthology. You don't pair both together, but I like doing weird stuff. So,
beautiful book. Where do you go now with this book? What are you trying to do?
Well, I am trying to do my best to get it visibility. We just had a huge book signing in L.A. at Mi Vida Boutique, where, you know, all the people in the book that are out there showed up. Luis J. Rodriguez showed up. The actors, you know, Big Puppet and Little Puppet showed up. This boutique is tiny. Tiny little art boutique, and there was people spilling out onto the street. It was packed. It was standing room only, and there was people spilled out all over the street. There was car clubs there up and down the street with their cars. It was a beautiful, beautiful event, and it was all grassroots, which was cool because that's how I do stuff. right now I'm just doing what I normally do, which is hustling. I tell people, ask for this book at your local library, ask for your local bookstores to carry this book. I rely heavily on places like Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but I'm really just trying to get this book and the authors and art the visibility, because major publishers will have the money and the capital to pump behind something like this and market it the way that it deserves. I simply do not have that kind of funds and that kind of capital, so I rely heavily on guerrilla marketing, which is mainly through social media and through the graciousness of radio stations, you know, and people like yourself who will give this kind of book and my kind of publishing house a chance. You know, again, I'm biased, but I think if you would put this book in front of anybody, they're going to dig it. I mean, it's a beautiful book, and the stories and the photographs and the artwork are simply amazing. It's an unprecedented book. My mission now is just trying to get as much visibility as I can.
Broken Sword Publications. Man, I love some of the other titles. Alcohol Soaked and Nicotine Stained.
Alcohol was my first, Demon was my very first book of my own stuff.
Bandis, the BSP Anthology of Chicano Literature.
Mm-hmm.
American Stories?
Yeah, American Stories with the 3 K's in there as a twist on the racism and the way the world's just turned upside down since 2001. That was my second book. It's got all kinds of crazy, wild stuff that I wrote in there.
If people want to find out more about you or about Broken Sword Publications, where do they go? How can they find out?
My website is brokenswordpublications.com. I'm very active on Twitter, on social media. On Twitter, I am at SJ Rivera. I'm on Facebook, Centino J. Rivera. I'm on Instagram. I'm a social media monster, man, because that's how I've done, you know, what I've done. I've gone from making chat books, you know, stapling them and folding paper to hosting literary events with Luis J. Rodriguez. So social media is really where you'll find me at if people are interested in, you know, asking me questions, talking to me. I sell books direct. I'll sell autographed copies direct. The photographer, Art Mesa, is also on Twitter, at Chicano_soul. He sells prints of the photography from the book and whatnot. He sells copies of the book, too. Look it up on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. They have it really cheap, too, which kills me because they're making me compete against myself. But that's a great way to get the book cheap and fast.
I'll tell you this, man. I love your vision. I love your point of view.
No, I appreciate it, man. Thank you for hosting me. I really appreciate it.
Centino J. Rivera, editor of Low Riding, Shots, Rides, and Stories from the Chicano Soul, out on Broken Sword Publications. Look for it now. Thanks for joining us on Espejos Aslan.
Thank you.
Attention all units, this is Sergeant Stanenko. We are changing from a code 3 to a code 3.7. Completely lost due to incompetence.